Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got TJ Erickson from Park Rapids, Minnesota. We got him back on the show. We've had him on a few times before. Very educational YouTube content is what you'll find TJ most notable for in the fishing industry here, and that's what we're always talking about. He's always putting out great content. I'm a big fan of his, so anything that he's got going on, I'm always willing to talk about, you know, whatever he's got going on, and he's been doing a bunch of fishing this year, putting out a bunch of great content. So, and I hadn't had him on since I believe we figured out the last time I had him on, it was still ice season. So all of open water topics were on the table for this one. But we quickly got into the lane of suspended walleyes. It's definitely a passion of his and mine as well. So it just, you know, we just kind of spent some time getting caught up with each other on this stuff. And it was really, really fun. But I definitely have a lot of questions for anybody that's talking suspended walleyes. And TJ is just one of those guys that has a few things figured out for sure. And or at least he's had some really great experiences that he can speak on. So that's what we talk about mostly in this conversation is suspended walleyes. A great conversation. TJ's got a lot of great recommendations and a lot of great stories and experiences to back it all up. So let's get to it here. Suspended walleyes with TJ Erickson.
Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. I want to take a minute to address a list of very important topics this time of year, especially here in the state of North Dakota, where hunting seasons are already underway. Number one, we need to be respectful of each other when we encounter other hunters in the field, whether you're recreating on private or public land, if you're interacting with a landowner or just other hunters in the field, we have to be able to interact respectfully and be cool with each other. Leave gates as you find them every time you go through, regardless, again, on private or public land. Check if land is posted physically or electronically. When we're parking our decoy trailers or small boat trailer on public roadways, we have to keep the roadway clear so other vehicles or farm equipment can pass through. Be respectful of that. And picking up our trash has to be a major priority. Now, accidents happen when we get back to the truck and we're in a hurry and it's after dark. Something falls out your door. But let's cut down on the accidents. Let's cut down on the excuses. Check around your vehicle once, twice, or three times before you leave every single time. And we can cut down on the trash that is left out on the landscape. That's always a big one every year. If we can do these things, then we're doing our part to hunt for tomorrow. And of course, I want to wish everybody a safe and successful season. For updates on hunting seasons, hunting regulations, seasonal updates, head to the North Dakota Game and Fish website. That link is in the description of this podcast.
Right on. TJ, do you remember the last time I had you on?
I was trying to think about that. Was it last fall?
It was, I mean, I know it wasn't crazy long ago.
I can't remember if we did anything through the winter or through the spring.
I truly can't remember.
I know for sure we did last fall because that was like right before this rainy trip.
We talked about it. I feel like I know I haven't had you on all summer.
Yeah, I don't
you know,
think
but
so.
I don't know
honestly,
why. That's why I'm just, I rack my brain all the time for these things. Okay, hold on. I had you on
February
at the end of February.
Texting, yeah.
There it is. Yep. I was just looking through. Okay.
Through texts. I was like, okay, I can't remember if there's one in between or not.
So that had to have been something ice related. Okay. So this is so for 2024, we have not talked open water at all. So that opens this whole conversation wide open. So I guess I need that level of an update. Let's start it right here. What is the open water update, TJ? I haven't had you on all season, so this can start wherever you want it to, man. What is the what's the update?
Yeah, man, thanks again for having me on. I just always enjoy chatting with you, whether it's through a podcast or just chatting on the phone. And I do got to say, like, you have been kicking out quantity and quality over the last stretch. I am like, every time I'm going for a drive, I get so excited. So I'm like, okay, who's he got on? What am I going to listen to? I just love the stuff that you're doing right now. So big props to you on that. But yeah, no, thanks for having me again. This, it's been a fun and wild summer. There's been, I feel like every time I talk to you, there's so many different changes. You know, we talked, I think last kind of like late ice time frame, and leading into that, I was having some decisions to make on some of this content stuff, some of the guiding stuff, and made kind of the challenging decision, but it was definitely the best decision to step back from guiding. And I basically just quit guiding altogether this summer because I wanted to do more focusing on content, because there just, you know, there isn't enough time in the day to do both well and both at the level that I wanted to. So kind of weighed the pros and cons. So step back from guiding this summer, really tried to hit some of the content things a lot harder, which was a very good choice for me, just, you know, personally, but also just so much fun. I just really enjoy going out, creating content, producing content, educating. You know, obviously, we've shared in past podcasts that I'm a teacher. So anytime I get to teach, and anytime I get to teach about fishing is even better. So just being able to really hammer out a bunch of content this summer on a ton of different things. Obviously, a lot of what I do is walleye specific. So really got a chance to do a bunch of that this summer, did some trips, did a bunch of fun trips recently. You know, me and Nick Lindner, Brett McComas, we just got back, I guess it's been a couple weeks now, from Rainy Lake. And that was just an awesome trip. We did it as kind of a way just to have an excuse to fish together, but also just to do some of our own content. But we also did a little competition video where we kind of collaborated on something. It's coming up in the works here, and that's going to be just a super fun format to how we did it. But a lot of fun getting together with those guys, doing a little fishing competition, catching a bunch of big walleyes. And yeah, it's been a lot of stuff going on, a lot of trips. Summer's been awesome, just relaxing and trying to just go hard with the content side of things.
I love hearing you collaborating with Nick and Brett on that stuff. I mean, you know, just watching your content, like individually, it makes total sense that you guys should be like spending time together and just being buddies. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And I'll probably for sure have some questions along those lines. But you know, like fishing wise, we kind of got to decide, you know, what we're going to talk about fishing wise. You talk about Rainy. I you know, last time we talked was ice fishing, and the time before that was kind of like summertime. I think we talked last year, you know, whatever, some summertime something, but it was one thing that I was meaning to talk about. Maybe this is kind of what we can spend some time on fishing wise. You made a video last fall catching like suspended walleyes, and I think that was on Rainy Lake as well. I don't know what your connection is up there, or if you told me, I forgot, but up on Rainy, suspended walleyes on swim baits, which was really cool. And then, you know, you've definitely been doing some cool things this summer. So I guess maybe kind of highlighting some of your videos, what have been some of the more memorable bites that you've been on? And, you know, maybe we could just kind of break down some of the cool things that you've been doing so far this year. You know, whatever comes to mind first.
Yeah, you bet. I'll kind of just take a step back and talk a little bit about some of the stuff that I've been filming this summer, even, or just some of the bites that I've been on. And, you know, a lot of what I try to do, I try to stay a lot of my content relatively locally, meaning like these smaller classic Minnesota lakes, because that's what a lot of people have a tough time catching walleyes on. And so through all the time I've spent on the water guiding, producing, like, I want to take some of that information and just make it a little more manageable for people to break down water and have a little more success fishing walleyes. You know, obviously with the advent of forward facing sonar, things are changing a lot. And I know not everybody has that, but I really try to do is take what I've been learning with forward facing sonar and not only like teach people that have forward facing sonar, here's what you do, but also here's what we've learned. How can you relate that to just your typical traditional sonar, whatever it might be, some of your traditional patterns? How can you take what some of the people with forward-facing sonar have learned and make your fishing better, even if you don't have it? And that's what a lot of my content has been. And honestly, right now, kind of as far as a topical walleye patterns happening right now, and then I'll kind of dive into some of the Rainy Lake stuff. But a lot of, you know, what I'm seeing, what I've been showcasing lately on these smaller kind of classic Minnesota deep clear lakes is, you know, one of my favorite ones that's kind of been coming out a little bit more is some of these like mid-range flats. You know, when I'm talking mid-range flats, that's like that, you know, 15 to 30 foot range where there's kind of, you know, an expansive area, not too big, like you don't want to have to cover too much water. But these kind of areas that are either muddy or sandy, they're, you know, close to, adjacent to some structure, that really helps as well. But man, I tell you what, when you drive over this, even with 2D sonar, you can see there's so much bait on this stuff, especially if it's a little bit muddier bottom. You know, those bug hatches that happen throughout the year, those are starting to come up. So all that, you know, whether it's the young of the year, or perch or shiners or whatever it is, they're going to eat that. And those walleyes are not far behind a lot of times. You know, they are relatively close to bottom. You know, one of the things I was listening to in a podcast recently was with those bug hatches, they'll come up and they'll kind of very slowly come up and be in like that bottom 4 feet. A lot of those walleyes be cruising through there. But then you see them suspend. So you're seeing a little bit of all of that on some of these mid-range flats. They're kind of cruising some of these, chasing some of this bait. So with forward-facing sonar, obviously it becomes very easy to move around, find these fish, cast directly at them. But this is a great time to pull spinners. I mean, you can get a relatively heavy bottom bouncer and say you're in 25 feet and it's a nice sandy, muddy flat. You can just drop that thing down there and you can cruise, especially if you've done some work driving around with your 2D or side imaging and you know there's some fish in the area. Cruise around with that, trigger some bites with those spinners. Just an awesome way. And another one that, like, kind of a pattern that I'm targeting is, this is probably gonna be no surprise to people, because this time of year, mid-lake structure is king. You know, I actually just got done posting a video on kind of breaking down the spot on the spot on some of this mid-lake structure, because obviously there's walleyes around mid-lake. Once it gets to be like mid-June, there's walleyes around this mid-lake structure pretty much for the rest of the year, but that doesn't mean they're going to be around like every part. And so whether it's forward-facing sonar or just time on the water, really being able to pick apart some of these spots on the spot. So the last video, like I said, they just literally drove around, didn't have a plan, like, hey, I need to talk about these spots on the spots. Like, I'm like, I'm just going to fish. When I catch a fish, I'm going to tell you exactly where I'm fishing. So you get like as real and authentic as possible. And so, you know, find some of those areas, you know, that I was fishing, and I find them are very typical areas to what you see. You know, saddles. Saddles are a huge one. It's in between humps, or there's a couple high spots, that's an area. You know, shelves or flats, if it kind of drops off and there's kind of like this feeding flat, prime area, points, little fingers sticking off of these humps. Mid-lake structure, those areas that those fish will just roam, and especially right on the tip of that. And another one that I've been doing a lot of lately is fishing the high points. And when I say high point, I'm specifically targeting humps that kind of top out in that 20 to 30 foot range this time of year, because that's kind of the depth range I'm seeing a lot of these fish. But fishing some of the high points, that very top of it, sometimes just a little pile of rocks, but those fish relate to that high point so often. And I didn't always realize that. You know, I was used to fishing the break lines of these humps or whatever it is. But then when I got forward-facing sonar, I fished a little bit more, seeing how often they relate to those. But if you drive over them with 2D sonar, they'll spook. So being able to, you know, recognize that they're there and then cast onto them before you get over or spook them. So those are some really good patterns right now. If you can throw like slip bobbers, drop shots. Another one that I really like is reaction baits, any sort of glide bait, casting on these, just triggering these fish to bites. Very effective and like very quick way to get bites, because you can get to these fish, mark them with whatever electronics you're using, and cast these on there. Just awesome. And even without forward facing sonar, you know, doing the same thing, casting over these with slip bobbers or, you know, any of the other baits, super prime. And you know, another kind of area that I really like to target this time of year, especially around home here, is targeting the weeds. I mean, that's all summer long, but this time of year, these big fish, and pods of fish, you'll see both. You'll see pods of fish, you know, maybe right on the edges of some of these weed lines, or mixed in, but you'll see these big fish around the weeds too. You'll see them cruising over tops of the weeds, you know, so you can see them with your forward facing sonar cruising over tops. You'll see those bigger fish also suspend off the weeds. You know, I actually think when Nick Linder was just on, you know, he was talking about that a little bit too. That's a pattern that we see all over in kind of these typical Minnesota lakes. Just being able to get off of those a little bit. So again, another time to pull spinners or to troll lead core or crankbaits, you know, along those weed edges, very effective. And then the last one, kind of what we'll get into here a little bit, is suspended walleyes. I mean, obviously this is something that is becoming more and more prevalent, something that I honestly wasn't making videos on a couple of years ago, because I was like, I want to keep this a little quieter for a little bit longer, but I also want to like share this with people because it's such a cool bite. And so that's what I've been doing a lot of this summer, even around home, was you know, fishing some of these suspended walleyes. And, you know, when I'm talking suspended walleyes, there's so many. Actually, the video I was literally just sitting down editing is talking big time details. Like, I go super in depth into the suspended walleye bites. There's like kind of four main areas that I find these suspended walleyes. And every time I do it, I learn more, which is really cool. Even the suspended walleye bite that I did last year, you know, things have changed. I've learned more since then and putting patterns together. You know, obviously there's the basin bite, like the deep water. That is a very classic suspended walleye bite. That one takes a little more time until you can start to see, you know, some of, you know, the bait that's cruising around. And, you know, obviously Lake of the Woods right now has a crazy basin bite going on with those big walleyes. I know you just had Max Wilson on. He was talking about that, just finding that life, you know, and that's a lot of what we're doing too. Find that life. And then when you find one fish, you'll typically find a few fish. But to dial in something that's maybe a little more tangible, other than this, okay, this giant basin, is, you know, finding some areas around structure. You know, this is 20 to 30 to 60 feet flats in and around structure. Those fish just roam all over that stuff. That stuff holds bait, you know, whether it's, you know, shiners or ciscos or smelt, which a lot of these big walleye lakes have. Finding those deep areas around structure, or even just those deep flats, that not, maybe not necessarily basin, but just in kind of deeper flats. And being able to just kind of roam some of that and helping to, you know, if you can read and identify where some of the thermocline is too, that's very helpful for a variety of reasons. One, that's kind of where you can set your depth at. And for me, when I'm doing this thing, one little caveat I do want to say is, especially if you're using forward facing sonar, which is a lot of times what you're doing for this bite, is setting it at, you know, 30 to 35 feet. You know, that's kind of where I want to put my bottom line at. You're going to see fish deeper than that, but I'll set it like 30 to 35 feet because I don't want to see those fish deeper, because I don't want to tempt myself to target them, you know, because a lot of times those fish might not survive, you know, whether it's barotrauma or whatever it is, pulling them out of deep water. So that's just one little caveat I do want to say with this kind of open water suspended bite, is being able to target those fish in an ethical manner. And so again, feeding through some of those, what I've been using a lot is those big swim baits. Right now, I want to find, I know Max talked about this a little bit too, I want to find a very, very stout hook, because these are big fish, you know? So what I've typically found is I'm getting like a half ounce smeltnator jig, and those things just have those crazy strong hooks. Those are the Northland ones, crazy strong hooks. And then I'm using like a 4 to 5 inch paddle tail. This last video that I shot, it was on the 4 inch paddle shad by Northland. I know, I think in last year's video, I did the diesel minnow that was a little bit bigger profile. But those things, you know, when you can cast over tops or cast behind them is what I typically try to do. Sometimes I landed it right on their heads, but if you can cast behind them and line it up, roll that thing right over tops of their heads, it's so fun. You can actually like see these things turn. And when you see them turn, half the time, you know, there's just that tiny bit of leg with your forward facing sonar. Half the time you'll feel that bite before you even see them attack it, because they hit it that hard. And it honestly feels like you're fishing lake trout. It's probably the most addicting bite that I've ever done for walleyes, and just a ton of fun. You can throw jigs and crawlers as well. I mean, a lot of the tournament guys have been sharing that too. It's just a deadly tactic to, you know, even get some of the more finicky fish.
Yeah. Like I'm curious though, before we like, cause I definitely do want to talk gear. Like, you're already getting into the gear and stuff, but like,
yeah,
talking about that suspended deal. Like that's kind of an obsession of mine going, you know, right now, like with like the content I'm consuming, like I'm loving that. I've been loving that stuff. And this is definitely a cool time of year for it to be happening. But like, you're talking about like yourself and like things, you know, things that you're learning and sort of like you're sort of evolving with this, and you're starting to, you know, see some patterns just in your own experiences, you know, whatever. I'm curious about that. Cause like, you know, the suspended fish, it seems like we almost got to get like the pattern element out of our head. We need to realize that it isn't like sort of an X or a waypoint on the map that we're actually heading to. So I'm kind of curious about that portion of the conversation and what you've learned, and just some tidbits that you can give us. Like, you know, again, I just would definitely recommend people go to your, you know, TJ's Guide Service YouTube and just watch these videos. They're going to get all this, but I want to talk about it. Like the pattern itself, like what are some of the things that you feel like are creating the consistencies or the confidence that you're in the right area when we're talking about some of these suspended fish, especially talking about the suspended fish that aren't, you know, suspended on the structure, or, you know, it's, I'm not talking about you know, being right on the tip of a point and they're 5 feet down over 20 feet of water suspended. I'm talking about like, I'm even more interested in, I should say, I'm interested in all of it, but I'm more interested in like those suspended fish that are, like you said, are maybe between two humps on a flat that's like, you know, it might be 40, 50 feet of water. You got your forward sonar and, you know, just all of your sonars kind of set at like a 30, 35 foot floor, because that's where you want to target is there or above. I'm curious about that, like the patterns, like what are some of the elements that you're looking for? And just sort of painting that picture for myself, like when I go out and I feel like I'm in an area that I should be looking out over some of this deep water for suspended fish. Like I feel like anytime that I've tried that, I'm not seeing the consistency yet, like to build confidence that like what I'm doing is definitely in the right area. Like, you know, and maybe it's situational. I guess that's maybe my question is like, what are these lakes set up like that give you the confidence that it's the walleyes that you feel like are consistently in these areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, even in the last year, I've dialed in a lot more pieces. And every time I feel like I get more pieces dialed in, I have more questions. You know what I'm saying? Like I get it dialed in on one lake and then I go to another lake thinking it's going to be similar. And sometimes this lake has a similar type bite, but is a little bit different, or it's entirely different. So some of this is a little situational depending on the lake. Obviously, like your lake of the woods, your rainy lakes, those are prime time suspended walleye bites, but they're not everywhere. And so some of the patterns that I've, even on some of the local lakes, some of these are some of the similar patterns is, you know, finding these areas that, number one, have life. I know Max talked about that a lot. Like you got to find something. I will find suspended walleyes with no bait, no anything around. That happens. But more often than not, I'm seeing it whenever I'm starting to see some bait. And usually for me, it's in 20 to even down to like 60 foot flats. You know, maybe it's tapering flats. Maybe they're somewhat close to structure. But one of the things I talked about in my last video is if you're a structure fisherman, you're like having a tough time getting used to this, instead of maybe if you have spots that are somewhat close, instead of pulling up the trolling motor, driving to the next spot, just take a little extra time and just you keep your live scope down, keep your forward facing sonar down, and just drive to the next spot with that. You'll be surprised at how many fish you see. Yes, there's going to be pike, bass, literally all these fish are suspending, but you'll be surprised at how many. And that's just a little way to build a little more confidence in it, because you know you're going to go from one spot to the next instead of just aimlessly trolling around over a giant basin. You know, you can have a little confidence knowing you're in fishy areas because there's structure around. But then once you start to dial that and you build a little confidence, then you can just cover ground. You know, I'm talking a lot about these flats. Sometimes they're around structure. But these big flats, you just got to cover ground. And just because you stop on a spot and maybe you have your trolling motor on three and you're just kind of putzing around for 5 minutes, you're like, you know, it's easy to get discouraged. Like, I'm not seeing anything, whatever. For me, I have my trolling motor cranked up. One of the reasons why I switched to lithium batteries, I have my trolling motor cranked up and I am just going. I'm just going to go and I'm just pan back and forth, back and forth. If I start seeing bait, I'll slow down a little bit and start making a little more kind of, you know, minute turns with the live scope, trying to really dial it in. But another thing that you can do, push that distance that you're scanning out. You know, depending on your unit, you may or may not be able to go further. But, you know, with me, with LiveScope, with the LVS34 Deucer, I can go 140, 50, 60, 180 feet out. Because when you're doing this, you're not looking for these small, like a fish buried in a rock, like looking for the most minute details. Like you're looking for, you have this whole big area and you're looking for one like thicker blip, you know. So for me personally, I have my color gain bumped way up because when I pan around, I want to be able to see, I use the blue color palette. I want to be able to see that red mark. So I can pan very quickly and I can cover a lot of water. And again, similar to what Max said, like the more time you get, the quicker you can move. You know, I've done this a lot, so I can move very, very quickly and I can just cruise. And all of a sudden I see a blip 160 feet away. Boom, I slow down, get a little closer to it. All of a sudden you see that, you catch one. Now you start panning around. After you see some bait, you find this fish. Now you start panning. All of a sudden you start seeing there's another fish. Oh, a little bit further, there's another fish. These fish do tend to hang out in the similar areas. You know, it's not like you're going to find one fish and then you got to go another half mile. Okay, then you find another fish. Like, you might go a half mile and not see anything, But when you do find an area, those fish, I wouldn't call them schools, obviously, because they're not like tight, but they're kind of in schools. They're a little more spread out. They're in a similar area, maybe chasing some of the same bait. And so being able to just really cover a lot of ground on these like mid-range flats, again, if you are not comfortable with that, find some areas that they have kind of that kind of stuff just around maybe structure. So that way it's a little more comfortable, a little easier, a little smaller area to break down. But I'm not going to lie, sometimes it just takes a lot of time cruising. You know, it takes a lot of time driving around, finding the bait, finding some of these fish kind of mixed in. And that is really what's been kind of the deal for me. One of the other patterns that was kind of a sneaky pattern that I fell onto last fall was when we really started dialing in, you know, some of the intricacies of this. But finding these areas that it's deep structure. So maybe it's, you know, 40 to 60 foot rock humps, you know, finding some of those, especially if they're big, if they're expansive, finding some of those. And, you know, you're not going to be fishing down that deep, obviously, but for whatever reason, these fish will be down 10, 15, 20 feet, but they're still relating to that structure, even though it's way the heck down there. You know, these fish, I don't know exactly why, you know, I have some theories. Sometimes I think that there's the structure and then out deep, there's that mud. You know, so that mud is on the edge. So it's kind of like that hard bottom, soft bottom transition that they relate to. Those bugs are coming off the mud a little bit more. And so that's what those fish are around. They might go down and, you know, go down to some of those rocks or whatever is down deep. But I find these big expansive areas that are very deep structure, specifically rock, very deep structure. And then I'm cruising and looking over top, looking down, you know, 10 to 20 to 30 feet over some of that. They definitely relate to that, even if they're not like sitting in the rocks. So that's kind of another little sneaky pattern. And that was what my video last fall, I showed a lot of examples of like what this looks like. And I was really piecing together some of those puzzles. That's especially true like in the season we have coming up in the fall. They really, really relate to those in the fall. When we were just up on Rainy Lake, I didn't see that quite as much. What I saw was them being on these deeper flats that were somewhat adjacent to some structure. And some of the times I'd be fishing structure, you know, maybe with reaction bait, something like that. And I'm like, you know what? There's this flat off to the edge. I'm just going to cruise that. And I'm just going to drive for the next 20 minutes and cruise around. And I would start doing that. And man, I would just start seeing bait and fish. And I'm like, where are these fish not? You know, at times I'm like, there's so many fish in all these spots that I try that, you know, are these fish just everywhere over this lake? Or is it just that they're related to structure? And then there would be stretches where I'm like, I cannot see a fish for the life of me. So definitely once you find an area holding some fish, there's going to be more in a smaller, as far as the grand scheme of things go, especially on lakes like Rainy or Lake of the Woods. But even locally, we're seeing a lot of the same things. I'm seeing these suspended fish over anywhere there's bait. I've seen them over 80 feet, down 20. I've seen them around that structure on those mid-range flats. So again, still something that I'm not going to say I have absolutely perfectly dialed in, even though we've been catching a ton of fish doing it. Just always having that mindset of like, there's still more to learn. So little piece of the puzzle that I've been learning, throughout the last couple of years. And yeah, it's just such an addicting bite because when you do find these fish and you get on the right fish, sometimes literally in a couple of my videos, I did an open water video even in June, because that's when this kind of started, did this open water bite. And there's a few of these bites where you just drop it right on their head. And it's literally like a lake trout, that bait is dropping down. And all of a sudden you see that fish turn up, even if it's 20 feet away, you know, that's 20 feet above that fish still, you see that bait dropping down. I just close my bail and I basically just start reeling because that fish is going to catch up and just smoke it. And you swear it's a lake trout. So if you get on the right fish like that, it can be a ton of fun. You'll have a lot of lazy follows too. So don't get discouraged by that. A lot of lazy follows that aren't going to commit. But we can talk about that here in a little bit too, about some things that I do to try to trigger these things to bite. But as far as patterns go, long-winded answer.
Zuloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloft Construction at their website, zuloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. I want to take a minute to address a list of very important topics this time of year, especially here in the state of North Dakota, where hunting seasons are already underway. Number one, we need to be respectful of each other when we encounter other hunters in the field, whether you're recreating on private or public land, if you're interacting with a landowner or just other hunters in the field, we have to be able to interact respectfully and be cool with each other. Leave gates as you find them every time you go through, regardless, again, on private or public land. Check if land is posted physically or electronically. When we're parking our decoy trailers or small boat trailer on public roadways, we have to keep the roadway clear so other vehicles or farm equipment can pass through. Be respectful of that. And picking up our trash has to be a major priority. Now, accidents happen when we get back to the truck and we're in a hurry and it's after dark. Something falls out your door. But let's cut down on the accidents. Let's cut down on the excuses. Check around your vehicle once, twice, or three times before you leave every single time, and we can cut down on the trash that is left out on the landscape. That's always a big one every year. If we can do these things, then we're doing our part to hunt for tomorrow. And of course, I want to wish everybody a safe and successful season. For updates on hunting seasons, hunting regulations, seasonal updates, head to the North Dakota Game and Fish website. That link is in the description of this podcast. This is the conversation I would want to have with you if we were just hanging out. Because that you're right, it's so addicting. You said it there. Like, I do want to expand on like how you're triggering bites, but also, like, you know, again, getting back to like my own self, where I'm at with a lot of this stuff, I'm obsessed with the suspended bite. I fish a lot like here out here on these western reservoirs like Sakakawea, but also I go home, you know, to where I grew up in Otter Tail County, and I fish lakes there, and I've just, you know, just had some really, really great, the last 2 years, so this year I had some really, really great outings, like looking for suspended fish on some of these lakes, like, but again, when I'm not catching a fish, I still have so many questions, like a fish behavior. Like if a fish follows, or if I cast 10 perfect casts and it does nothing, like I guess I have to make some assumptions as to what's going on there, or I just try to completely forget about it altogether and just hope, you know, and just focus on the ones that do give me something. But for you, you know, like, you can work backwards from some of your successes, hopefully, and describe, I'm hoping you can describe, like, when a fish follows, like talking about those lazy follows, or like when a fish follows, or just talking about the fish behavior in general. If you don't catch a fish, you know, how do you decide that these are walleyes and it's helping you put the pieces together? I mean, besides just what you feel like you know the shape of a walleye is, based on the behavior of this suspended bite, when you're getting those follows, and you know, like, what are some of those elements to this conversation that you could just pass along? Like, what do you see these other walleyes doing, and sort of, you know, do you come back around on these fish and catch them again? Do you waypoint any of these fish that are just out there being lazy because you feel like they'll still be in that same area? Like where, what can you pass along?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I'll do my best to explain as much as I possibly can, even without visuals. And one thing I will say, like talking about live scope and identifying, you know, just another shameless plug. I just put out a video recently where it's like a mastering live scope where I go through like bait, fish, what direction they're moving. I just like go heavy into here's what you're looking at when you're looking at live scope, and here's what you're seeing differentiating some of that. So when you're talking shape, that kind of thing, if you're interested in that, take a look at that one. But as far as identifying which fish are walleyes, this is something that continually evolves for me. You know, just a short little story. I was out fishing a local lake recently that has an awesome suspended bite like that in so many areas, and was just catching a lot of nice fish, you know, mid 20 inch fish. It was just so much fun because, you know, you cast on 10 of them and only one of them would bite, but that one that bites just smokes it. But I was getting a pretty good feel for like, okay, here's kind of where they're at. They're sometimes around bait. They're obviously usually suspended because that's kind of what we're talking about. And a lot of times they're at least somewhat moving. You know, it might not be moving fast, but a lot of times they're at least moving a little bit. You can kind of identify the direction or that kind of thing. But Then I go to another local lake, and it kind of confused the whole process because I'm going, and it's like this perfect, it's like 25 foot flat. And I just put the live scope down, and it's just loaded. Fish anywhere from 20, so I'm over, like I said, 25 feet. And this is fish anywhere from 20 feet down, so 5 feet suspended, to like 15 feet suspended. And I'm like, this is going to be amazing. This is like a playground right here. And I start casting. I probably casted at 75 fish. And I don't even know if I got one to follow. And so now I'm like, what in the world are these? And so finally I'm looking, I see a suspended fish and I see it starting to swim up. I was like, okay, this is a fish that's moving. I see it. So then I'm like, oh, perfect. This thing might actually surface. I'll see what it is. So this fish surfaces and it's a sucker. And I've always known, you know, obviously if you're a walleye fisherman, you know that suckers hang around a lot of the same areas as walleyes.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they were suspended, I'm not saying that all these, you know, some of these might've been walleye, some of these might've been pike. They just were not interested at that time. But knowing that at least, cause I saw that happen multiple times, knowing that at least some of these were suspended suckers was a little bit disheartening in the fact of like, how many suckers did I just cast on, you know? And sometimes I'll drop my AquaView down so I can really identify like what these fish are. But then going further into that, now I wasn't getting any of those to bite. So I slid up towards the weeds. I was like, okay, this is frustrating. I'm going to go and I'm going to slide up towards the weeds. And you know, going up towards the weeds, there's some sparse weeds, and I see some big marks mixed into the weeds. And I was like, oh, here we go. Now that they're around weeds, they've got to be, you know, something, you know, that's going to bite. So I cast onto them. Sure enough, catch it like a, you know, 27, 28 inch walleye. I was like, perfect. You know, and I'm enjoying how social media goes. I post that little clip on there, and everyone's talking about how it's cheating and da 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 da. And I so badly just wanted to put a time lapse of the last 2 hours of casting on 75 fish and not even getting a sniff.
Totally.
You know, they're seeing, but that's a whole other side tangent. So talking about identifying, that kind of threw a loop into some of my, so I would say some of that's lake dependent, because the other lake that I was fishing, if I saw a suspended fish, it was 90%, 95% a walleye or maybe a pike, you know, maybe a bass, but you know, very much a walleye. So some of that is lake dependent, but if you can see them up, off bottom, and they're actually moving a little bit, I find one thing I noticed, those suckers tended to be just sitting there. They weren't moving a whole lot unless they went up and surfaced like that. And so that might muddy the waters more than add clarity, but it is just some more information from time on the water. But everywhere else that I've seen, if those fish are suspended and you're seeing bait around, you know, that is another thing. There wasn't a lot of bait around that area. I was seeing all those fish, so that might be part of it too. So if you're seeing bait, you're seeing fish suspended and you're seeing them actually moving a little bit, those are good signs. It can be tougher to get the bait in front of them, but if you do get it, a lot of times they're going to be ready to eat. So that is really the only lake that I've found that I've seen those suspended fish like that, that won't even follow. Pretty much every other lake that I've been on, you're seeing them up off bottom, you're seeing them around bait, you're seeing them moving. Those fish are at least going to give you a sniff. Now, you know, talking about how to trigger some of these fish to bite, when I was just up on Rainy, the first day that I was up there, I would cast beyond these fish. This is getting a little more technical with some of this. You know, you want to see what direction they're moving. So sometimes taking a little bit longer and identifying whether it's moving the live scope side to side, whatever it is, seeing them go further or closer. You want to kind of identify which way they're moving. And I want to try cast beyond them or at least in front of them because I want them to be able to see this thing falling. You know, they can see up obviously better. And then I drop it to probably a few feet above where they're at. You know, if it's dropping right on their head, sometimes I wouldn't cast out far enough to drop right on their head and they would still come up, turn and just crush it. But usually I try to cast beyond them and just kind of slow roll and I'll see them turn. Half the time they'll turn and they'll just smoke it before you even know. And the other half of the time they'll just follow and they'll follow and they'll follow. First day I was up there, the only thing they would bite on would be just keeping it at that same consistent speed. It worked out perfect. The wind was blowing. So actually I'd cast on these fish, get around them. And then I just let the wind push me and I would just hold my rod steady. Sometimes it would take, you know, 30 seconds for them of following to actually bite, you know, so don't give up on those fish. I have that tendency, like I'm so used to like reaction baits and getting these fish to trigger bites right away that if they don't bite right away, I'm going to go find another fish, which is honestly a pretty good tactic because you're very efficient. Then you're finding those aggressive fish. But this specific day, all they wanted was that slow roll. And they just wanted that paddle tail just moving, you know, and they just followed. And they'd eventually, when they bit, they would still just smoke it, but it would take them a while to decide. And one of the fish, even I had literally 5 feet underneath the boat. And I got to a point where I was basically still Like I almost could have looked down and see it. Rainy is a little more stained, you know, so I wouldn't have been able to see it, but it was 5 feet underneath the boat and I stopped even moving. You know, luckily with those paddle shads from Northland, you know, they're so, with that plastic material, they can move so easily. So there might've still been a little movement, but that thing sat underneath the boat, basically stopped moving and eventually decided to bite it. You know, a couple times what I would try that day is I would try giving it pumps, or I would try doing like a quick reel, let it sit, quick reel, let it sit. And anytime I would do that, they would just boom, turn and go straight to the bottom. Now fast forward to the next day. The next day, all they wanted, I shouldn't say all they wanted, that like pump or that fast reel wouldn't trigger those fish. It would just make them go nuts. So if they were following for a little bit, I still started with that slow roll. If they started following for a little bit, I just do like a half turn or a full turn on a reel just to like get it so it's moving away. And I would do that once, maybe twice or three times. And a lot of times that's what would trigger those things to absolutely crush it. And that's one of the things I do recommend. You know, when we're doing these heavy swim baits, it's half to sometimes up to an ounce, depending on how big or how fast you're moving. And so I like having a little more stout rod, talking about action and triggering bites. I like to have a little more stout rod. The rod that I just picked up, that's my favorite rod for doing this. It's a 7'2". It's a medium heavy fast action. It's by Elliott. And this thing was specifically designed for these big swim baits because, you know, if you have like a medium light or something, or even a medium, sometimes those bigger swim baits, when you give them that pump, that rod has so much bend to it that it's not even really doing a whole lot, especially if you're out a little further. And so I beefed it up to that medium heavy because that, now when I give it that pump, it gives it that nice little bit more of a snappy action. So that's another thing triggering these bites, having that kind of right setup to get the action out of the baits that you're looking in. These heavier baits are, you know, if you are a little more better with that kind of heavier rod, if you're using some of those lighter presentations, like an 1/8-ounce jig with a crawler, obviously you're not worried about that as much. You can use that medium light and you can just slow roll that thing in front of their face or whatever it needs to be. But that was definitely the key into getting some of those bites. It was kind of the tale of 2 days of what they were looking for. And the other one that I will use a lot is just those minnow profiles. It's in the same kind of eye candy plastic. Just those minnow profiles. It's not the paddle tail, so it doesn't have that movement when it's swimming through the water, but you can give it little twitches. It's got a ton of movement. I find that a lot. Some of these fish, more so around home, that tends to be a little better than maybe a paddle tail for whatever reason. Maybe it's a little slimmer profile. Maybe it's just the action of it. It's like that, or even like those jerk shads. So those more like fluke style profiles. So again, long-winded answer, but hopefully got enough detail to explain kind of how to trigger some of these fish.
Oh yeah, dude. And you definitely answered my next question, because I noticed on one of your recent videos, or maybe it was like the most recent video, you know, that you had a medium heavy rod, and you don't hear a ton of that, you know, on a jig stick or like on spin tackle for walleyes, you know, almost anywhere, you know, or at least, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of walleyes get caught on medium heavy power rods, but it's probably a less specific, you know, decision or whatever. I like the way you articulated that big time. I was definitely going to ask you about that. So I appreciate that a whole ton. But even like, you know, I really appreciate, you know, the honesty, you know, talking about, you know, the fish behavior and just some of the, you know, just some of the breakdown, just some of the consistencies or some of the learning curve for you, you know, talking about those suckers. I feel like that's that I have some very, like, I'll never forget them. Some encounters that I had. Well, one was last year. Jaden Thomas, he works at Shields in Fargo. I've had him on the show a handful of times. He's a good angler for sure. I talked him into coming out on the boat with me last summer. I just got an active target. Like, I just got forward sonar in my boat. So we were just figuring that out. And he was helping me with that a little bit. But I'll never forget it. Like, we were, like, the first half of the day, we were still kind of scratching our heads. We were going around, whatever. It's like a summertime deal, July or August. And I guess where I'm going with this is we were seeing plenty of suspended fish under the same circumstance you're talking about, looking at like 50, 60 foot flats adjacent to a lot of, you know, a lot of intermediate, you know, shallower structure, and a weed line that's in that like 16 to 20 foot range. And so, you know, looking at the more classic spots we could find on the map, but definitely focusing on trying, you know, we were intentionally trying to find these suspended fish, and we were seeing the areas where all the life was at. So then we start, you know, that kind of narrowed down our search, just the way you described. But we still hadn't had like a validating fish catch yet. And and we'd had some follows, whatever, probably caught a couple of smaller pike. But I think we knew that that's what they were when we were throwing at them. But definitely we had some head scratches of like, gosh, those definitely seem like walleyes. Like we're talking ourselves into the fact that these are definitely like 4 or 5 pound walleyes that we've been just burning through. And we just hadn't gotten one to bite yet. Having some follows and Jaden with a jig wrap, and he's kind of a maestro with a jig wrap. And, he is like one of the bigger marks. I mean, we're absolutely telling ourselves this is a walleye and we're just yelling at this fish to bite. He makes a long cast. This fish follows like probably 30 to 40 feet. And now it's underneath the boat, you know, maybe 15 feet below the boat, again, over like 60 plus feet of water. And this fish is working up and down on his jigging wrap. And we can tell it's a nice quality fish. And, finally, we just see that motion like you're talking about. Like he like set the hook before the screen, you know, before the bait and the fish got together on the screen, because this fish just surged and popped him. It was like, finally. So we're hooked up. I'm so jacked up on the net, and we don't even have the fish in the boat yet, but we're just fist pumping because we finally have our bent rod. We've casted at like 100 of these fish and we're so validated already. Because he, you know, his jig wrap finally got hit, and it ended up being like a 5 pound lake sucker, and so then we went from like the high of high to like the lows of lows, because we're like, we were so unvalidated that maybe we hadn't casted at one walleye, like all of our confidence, right? That we were just so thirsty for. Was so shattered in that moment. But I'll also never forget that. Like, that was such a learning curve of like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. Like, that a sucker would do this. And it was like one of the biggest lake suckers we'd ever seen. We should have looked up what the state record was. It was just like unreal. It was right. A big, big fish. But okay, and then fast forward this year. So I kind of had that in mind. That was a memorable experience for me in my journey of sort of, in this obsession over suspended walleyes. But again, to piggyback on your experience now, a different lake, different time of year, earlier this spring, like around Memorial weekend, up in northern Minnesota on a lake that has a lot of deep water in it. And we're again, just cruising around with forward sonar, sort of trying to see, you know, just sort of pushing the boundaries of like how many different types of ways we can find and catch a walleye. Cause I think, you know, you can kind of do some classic stuff in the spring and find like shallow flats and, you know, jigging a minnow type stuff. But we were seeing, because you have forward sonar, you know, we're seeing fish and, you know, doing other things, and we're kind of waving it out over deep water or whatever. And a little bit deeper sort of secondary break line. And don't get me wrong, water temps were climbing a little bit at this point. So, there was some fish, definitely we were catching fish shallow, but they weren't all shallow, you know, and we were seeing some more hefty marks like post spawn. I was like, you know, I bet you if we're going to catch a bigger fish, you know, albeit it could happen in the shallows. But again, I kind of had my sights set on, you know, how soon can I get on, you know, a deeper bite or a suspended bite, you know, just thinking like these hungry post spawn females, where could they be? And we're seeing bait everywhere too. So like I saw some big marks, sort of a cluster, sort of an area where there was just like a series, like all of a sudden, boom, those signs of life really showed up and you could tell everything was there. There was bluegills way up by the surface. There was bait balls, you know, kind of outside, and we're still a stone's throw away from a good weed line, where there's like hard bottom and rock and weeds meeting each other, right? And we probably caught a couple of fish or caught a couple eater walleyes in this area, but I see a couple of big suspended marks, like 10 feet off the bottom over say 25 feet of water. Right. But like, it's an awesome area that all this great habitat's all right around there. And we're a stone's throw from a weed line, but we're also a stone's throw from like 80 feet of water. But here's this suspended fish and they're not moving a whole lot. Again, to your point, fish was pretty stationary. And I throw a jig with live bait. I don't know if it was a crawler or a minnow. I can't remember that detail, but I make a good cast where it's going to fall right on this fish's head. And this fish reacts when my bait is like at least 10 feet over its head. It gets vertical and it's coming up. It lets the bait fall past and it catches it going down. And I mean, I just you can see the line jump. So I set the hook blind because I just knew that fish was there. Everything's happening on the screen. And it's just like, it's going to be my favorite walleye of the season. And it comes in and it's like a 3-pound sucker. And I'm just like, I don't know, like, these, again, I'm like, these are my long-winded fish stories, but too, like, they were very memorable to me that, like, on one side, as walleye anglers, we're so thirsty and looking for a pattern to start unlocking that code to just tell us exactly what's what, so that even if a fish doesn't bite, now I'm still learning, I'm still collecting data points. But then at the same time, it's like these experiences sort of shatter that hope that, like, we still need to be so objective about these things and need to just have such an open mind. And then at the end of the day, you know, put all that technical, put all that overthinking aside and just, you know, high five yourself that, like, it just had like a really cool fish catch, regardless of what it was.
Right. And that is one thing I will say, as much as, the comments on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram or whatever, as much as they want to say, you know, it's like fish in a barrel, anything with forward facing sonar, you know, doing a suspended bite is not for the faint of heart. I've spent, you know, there's been times where I'll go out and I'll like, I'm going to try to figure this suspended bite out on a new lake. You know, I've got it dialed in on some other lakes. Like, let's go to a new lake, and I'll fish for 4 to 6 hours with hardly even throwing a cast because I'm just not seeing anything. You know, yep. And so you're trying to dial in these patterns. So it's definitely not for the faint of heart. So I will say, if you're trying this out, don't get discouraged. If you really want to get it dialed in, I would recommend either going to a lake where you maybe heard some rumblings about a suspended bite, or go up to a lake like a rainy lake or a lake of the woods where you know that these bites are happening and you can get some confidence that way. That would be how I would start, instead of just like going to your favorite lake, whether you know, not that that can't happen. But you can sometimes spend a lot of time with not a lot of results. But no matter what, if you do that, you're still going to learn something. So yeah, definitely not for the faint of heart at times.
Yeah, dude, that's probably the point right there, is like, just get comfortable with the fact that the success is going to be hard to come by. And if you're comfortable in those scenarios, and definitely pick and choose. You know, something you either do alone where you're sort of like mentally prepared for it, and if, you know, if you're going to do it with somebody, you got to have that conversation before you go out there, because there's probably going to be some downtime. And, you know, maybe your fishing partner needs to bring a book to read or whatever it is.
Funny. This is another little funny story. Speaking of that, got to throw this one in there. One of the best suspended bites I got on this summer. So it was in June, on a lake that I was just learning the suspended bite. And me and my wife were going to go out in the boat. And actually it was my wife and my sister-in-law as well. It was like just flat, calm, hot, sunny, like perfect day for swimming, you know? And so there we're like, okay, let's go swimming for a little bit. So they're swimming and I swim for about 5 minutes and I'm like, I got a fish, you know, I can't do this. And so I was like, here's the deal. I'm going to tie a rope. You guys float in your tubes. I'm going to get on my trolling motor. I'm just going to just drive around anywhere. And it was one of the best suspended bites. I had put a little reel on my Instagram that people were loving. You know, I did a little where I'm catching the fish and she's sitting on the tube. But I'm not kidding you. I probably caught, you know, it's probably like an hour to 2 hours. And I probably caught 20 to 26 inch walleyes just randomly cruising. Some was over basin. Some was around structure. It was one of those days. So those flat, calm and sunny days, I think those walleyes will push off that structure as well. You know, I was talking about patterns. Those walleyes will push off, and then those windy, cloudier days, they will sometimes move on structure. It's just another little side note. But when you're talking about that, it just really triggered that memory of like, man, I wish I would have been filming a video that day, like them just floating back there and I'm just whacking walleyes.
That's awesome.
So fun.
I think you make a good point there too, that it is definitely something people need to be conscientious of, is like, you know, the walleye chop or like a classic walleye chop, like, you know, for so much of the fishing that we're more familiar with, or more traditional sense of walleye fishing, you know, wind and is an important element to a good bite. I think that's another big part of this conversation where, you know, we learn with forward sonar that, you know, if we can cast that fish before we drive over them, that calm situation where that could definitely play into.
Yeah, this is not like a stained body of water. We have a bunch of lakes, you know, in the Park Rapids area that are just crystal clear. And it was a crystal clear lake. You could probably see down 20 feet or so. So it's not like I was on the stained body of water. It was like, as for typical walleye fishing, it's like your worst nightmare for as far as the bite is concerned. And it was, but like I said, I think that's because those fish will oftentimes just push off and roam that structure or roam that open water when it's calm and sunny on, you know, some of those types of lakes.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. What are some other, I mean, you know, you definitely answered some of my questions on your own, like, you know, talking about some of the gear, you know, I just, you know, I like the gear recommendations or some of your preferences when we're talking like some of the baits that, that you're targeting these suspended fish with in certain scenarios, and just talking about the pattern itself, but, and just talking about your experiences where, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. These are the type of bites that if you're breaking it down for the first time or on a new body of water, you know, expect to cover ground and, you know, don't necessarily expect the fish to jump in the boat right away. There's definitely, you know, you definitely got to nuance some of these things to really keep yourself in the zone. You got to find the zone first kind of a deal. But what else, if anything at all, comes to your mind that we should, hit up, or just maybe some tidbits or just any memorable fish catches that you otherwise want to break down before we wrap this up? Because we're really good on time here.
You bet. Yeah, no, like I said, I just, you know, don't put yourself in a box with any of this. Even some of the suggestions that I've given, these are some of my personal experiences, but that doesn't mean that's the only places they are. So, you know, don't put yourself into a box. You know, in fact, when me and Nick and Brett were just, you know, up on Rainy, there were some areas where I'd had some experience and I had caught some suspended fish and I'm like, oh, I'm so excited to get back there and try that again. I drove over these areas. Nothing is in the area. And I'm just like deflated. Like, oh my goodness, was that just a freak thing? Is this going to happen again? But then I keep working, you know, cause you know, some of it was during the competition as well, where I'm like, I have to catch these fish. We're competing right now. And so I just, you know, kept working on some of these areas and I just kind of went out on a limb and I just committed to that suspended pattern of like, I just got to find these fish. And it took a little bit of driving around at times, but then, you know, thinking outside the box a little bit, trying some different things, or maybe some fish were areas where I know fish were had. Then I just worked different areas, worked around there, worked out a little deeper, worked up a little shallower, just trying some different things. You're going to really unlock a lot of different things if you kind of think outside the box and don't get stuck into, you know, one or two specific patterns. But again, it's a little easier to say being up on a beautiful body of water like Rainy Lake with a bunch of big walleyes up there. But again, that's just such a special place.
All right, then let's wrap this up, kind of revisiting the content that you're talking about. This competition content, like, what's going to be the schedule of that? What can people expect?
Yeah, this is going to be a ton of fun. And this kind of stemmed, you know, last year, me and Nick and Brett went to Devil's Lake and we just got, anytime you get a bunch of fish heads together like that, that are doing content, like just the ideas start flowing. Those two are just phenomenal anglers. Like just listen to those guys talk. I just learned so much. And if you watch any of their content, you know that they are just incredibly good sticks. And so we start brainstorming ideas and we're, you know, we'd love to fish together all the time. We just, with our schedules, it can never happen, but we're like, we need to make an excuse this summer to get together, do some content. And so we like, let's do like a little competition, like let's make something a little fun. So we have some good banter between us and it's just a fun time. We're like, let's put our money where our mouth is kind of, just so to speak. And let's do a little something. So we were kind of brainstorming some ideas and, you know, a couple years prior, I had actually gotten connected with, their names are Matt and Alyssa. They run a resort called Sunset Country Outfitters up on Rainy Lake. It's like seriously heaven on earth for me. It's this private island out on Rainy Lake. It's an amazing place. So I got connected with them and I went up there. Me and my wife actually went up there and I had never been on Rainy Lake, I think, at that point. And I caught some nice fish. I'm like, where am I? All these fish are just, you know, thick. So I'm like, I got to keep coming back here. So fast forward to, you know, where we're talking, I was like, hey, you know, if we want to do a walleye competition, Rainy might be a great spot. I can talk to Matt, you know, see if he has openings because this is like a perfect area to go. You know, typically a lot of what they do is like the all-inclusive thing where they have like the American package. You show up with like a business trip or whatever it is and they take care of everything, food. You know, they do guided fishing, that kind of thing. But we're like, hey, we just want to rent a cabin because they do a little bit of that as well. And so we did that with those guys, got connected, and we kind of decide, we're like, how do we want to do this? You know, there's been some fishing competitions and we don't want to copy anybody. We don't want to kind of make it unique, but we also just want to have a ton of fun doing it. And so we kind of came up with the idea. We had, you know, three periods, essentially. We had 3 hours was the first period, 3 hours was the second period, and 1 hour was the last period. And so it's the biggest five fish of each period. And so, you know, we did the first period. So that's going to be its own video on each of our own individual channels.
Okay.
And so you're going to kind of have to watch each video to see like, okay, who's ahead after round one. Then we did the second period. We did like half hour break just to regroup and stuff. And did a second period of 3 hours, the biggest five fish of that period, you know, and we keep combining all of these lengths. And so that's also going to be on our own individual channels. So, you know, you'll have to watch on everybody's own individual channel. And then the last period we called the power hour. And this was still five fish, but you have 1 hour. And so now the mindset's a little different. You know, I'm used to like these suspended walleyes. It might take a little bit of driving around. You might not. So I'm like, 1 hour to catch five fish, that is not always going to be easy. So we did that as kind of a way to like, that last round is going to be crazy no matter what happens. Somebody could have a huge lead going into that last round. And somebody catches two walleye, somebody catches five, even if they're 20 inches, you know, like that's 60 extra inches. So it's like, it was kind of a fun way to make that last round like super intense. And I was, you know, kind of nervous for it because I'm like, I don't know if I have a, you know, I don't have like, okay, I'm going to go pop a bunch of eaters. Like I don't have a spot up because I chase big fish up there. And so it's kind of a fun way to do it. And then that last video actually is going to be, we're going to combine it all into one video in like real time. So you can see it, that how it's happening, you know, not having to go bounce back from one video to the next. I'm not sure what channel it's going to be on yet, but like I said, it's going to be all one video, that last hour, just super intense, seeing what happens in real time. And yeah, it's a ton of fun. It was a super fun thing to do. And I'm not sure exactly when we're going to get those done. We're hoping for sure by like September to have those videos posted. And we're going to, you know, we're not sure on the post dates yet, if it's going to be every other day or once a week or what, how we're going to kind of space those out. But we want it to be, you know, relatively quick, back to back to back. And we're going to try, I'm not sure if it's going to work with all our schedules. Ideally, we'd like to do it as like a little premiere on YouTube. So, you know, we could all be in the chat and we could be like chatting back and forth with each other and whoever comes to watch, you know, like chatting back and forth and just seeing how it kind of all plays out in real time. Is going to be super cool. So kind of a unique, you know, be essentially three different videos or three different parts to it. And that last hour is crazy. So it's,
yeah,
it was really cool. Just trying to find some ways to be creative with it. And honestly, just have a lot of fun because those guys are phenomenal anglers and just great dudes. And, we had a really good time doing it and I'm really excited for those to drop.
I think it's just an awesome way to put some content together. It's kind of like for the fans, you know, it's like, it's fun to see you guys doing something that's, just, you know, having fun while we get to watch you fish and learn from it. But also seeing you have some fun.
Yeah. And I just love it too. You know, it's like kind of even like the guide group that we have when I was guiding here in Park Rapids, like with these guys, it's so fun because it would be so easy to like, oh, these guys are my competition. You know, like they're putting out videos too. And da, da, da. And both those guys, I mean, there's a number of, you know, creators that I've kind of chatted with and everybody's kind of got the same mindset of like, no, man, like we want to see you succeed, even though the world is so used to like tearing people down right. And any competition is bad or anything like that. We're like, no, man, I want to see you succeed just as much as I want to see me succeed or anybody succeed. Like we're pulling for each other and we just have, like I said, they're just top notch dudes, which is 90% of why I wanted to hang with these guys. There's top notch dudes and we have a ton of fun together. And I just wish our schedules would allow it to do it more, but, hopefully in the future, we plan on doing a few more things like this and just kind of continue to, you know, get the feedback, you know? So if you do end up watching these or, you know, you're listening to this, we always want feedback of like, what do you guys want to see? How can we make it better? Did you like it? What are the parts you didn't like? Because bottom line is, yes, we do it because it's a ton of fun, but we want to do something that people want to watch because us as also the, you know, viewers of content as the audience of other people doing these, we love them. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Like, I love when guys do this. I love when guys do little competitions because it just adds another little element. You know, it's not necessarily the educational side, even though we all kind of talk about what we're doing while we're doing it. But it's definitely more the entertainment and just like adds a little spice to things too. So yeah, always give feedback. We love hearing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's like, I'll definitely, you know, sort of latch onto the educational side of things. I feel like that definitely motivates me to watch things. But when I'm watching it, if it's entertaining or just to sort of see – sort of like your personalities come out, you know, where it's sort of just inherently when you're doing a competition. I think that's what's a lot of times what's fun about like these the competitions on YouTube is like it's really just such a perfect setting to watch anglers just sort of be themselves, and you sort of see, you know, sort of the highs and lows, and, you know, seeing somebody get excited about a fish catch or seeing somebody, you know, getting all, you know, just a reaction to maybe dumping a fish before it gets in the net. And it's like, you know, like those are kind of memorable and fun, and they just add so much texture, and you sort of that realism where you get to know, it's almost like you feel like you get to know somebody. You're almost like a little bit closer and relate to, you know, to it, but they're educational too.
Yeah. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but I will say the highs were high and the lows were low, just like any sort of tournament, even though it's just a small little fun thing. I think all of us have these like moments of extreme highs. And then there are these moments of either dumping a big fish or something. And you're just, all you want to do is shut off the camera and just cry. You know, it's like, even though it's something we're all so competitive, even though it's, you know, something simple like this, it was just like we talked about earlier too. If we could have had just a fly on the wall in like the nights that we were all getting together to and talking fishing and just some of the banter that was going on, it was just like, oh, that was fun to be a part of. It would have been fun for people to experience.
Oh yeah. No, I love it, man. I'm looking forward to it for sure. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, we kind of got through the fishing part of this conversation, which is kind of important. People might listen to this like a month from now. This stuff will already be out by then, but yeah, I just definitely wanted to get into that a little bit for those of the listeners here that are going to listen to this right away, so that they can be keyed up on it. I definitely wanted to promote that stuff. So cool, TJ. Well, I appreciate it, man. So much great information. There's so many things that, you know, just, you know, we just got to keep getting together season after season, because I just love picking your brain on some of the things that you're seeing, and just like how your brain works. I like how you fish. When I watch your content, I can relate to your approach to things, because I feel like, you know, whether I'm sort of, you know, getting it from you, or it's just maybe already kind of was my theory or my idea, I just really relate to the way you fish on your videos and everything, and the way you talk about it. You definitely, I definitely learned from you a lot. So I really appreciate your time on this, man. And yeah, so that being said, I guess, you know, I it's probably a little redundant. If people get to this far in this conversation, they know how to find you, but maybe that's just how we got to wrap it up. Like always, if people aren't already subscribed to your YouTube channel or your social medias, where can they find you?
Yeah, you bet. And first off, I just, again, want to say thanks for having me on it. You know, especially like just looking over even like the last year, just like all of the amazing people that you've had on and just these like leaders in the industry. So just being able to hop on with you in light of all of that is just a humbling experience on top of it. You know, you just have so many phenomenal dudes on here, which is a ton of fun. So yeah, appreciate you having me on again. But yeah, it's pretty much everywhere is TJ's Guide Service. Even though technically I'm not guiding anymore, but that's what everything is for still now. But
you're guiding me, man. I'm not in your boat, but man, you're guiding me on my journey to get better at fishing. So I think you're still a guide.
Yeah. Virtual guide at this point, right?
Yeah. Right on, man. No, awesome. That's perfect, man. That's perfect. No, man. Yeah. I appreciate you for sure, man. I definitely get a lot out of these conversations and a lot out of your stuff. So stay in touch as always, TJ, and yeah, keep grinding out there, and yeah, whenever the next cool thing is happening, maybe this winter sometime, when you're pumping out some videos, we'll have to get back together. All right, man?
Yeah, you bet. Appreciate it again, Taylor.